Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Going to be taking a look at outdoor winter activities today with Gary Engberg, professional tournament angler and fishing guide. But before we do that, before we get talking with Gary, I wanted to introduce you to our new producer for this 11 to 12:30 time slot. If you've called the show the last couple of weeks, you would have heard Judith Sears-Poisson, our new producer, who's replaced Jim Packard. But if you haven't called, then you wouldn't have heard her lovely voice. Hi, Judith.
Hi, Larry. Good to be here.
Well, I wanted you to give our listeners a chance to meet you. So
sure.
Tell us a little about yourself.
Well, first of all, I want to correct you on one thing, and it's not how to say my name. It's that no one can replace Jim Packard. I'm following Jim Packard, but I'm not sure that I or anyone is up to replacing Jim Packard. So I'm thrilled to be here. I've been a longtime listener of Wisconsin Public Radio, both AM and FM, and a longtime listener of your show. And so the opportunity to come to WPR was really kind of a dream come true. I was fortunate to host a show on community radio here in Madison, WORT. I hosted a live call-in interview program for a little over 10 years every other Friday on a public affair. And so I had the experience of live radio and producing for myself and hosting. And so being able to work with you and all of the great people here at WPR was just a wonderful opportunity.
Well, it's great. It's really great to have you here. What do you like best about the job so far?
I think what I really like is that there's great structure every day. You know, you've got live radio coming on at 11, so you better have a guest and a topic and questions and all that. But there's so much variety within that structure. And so I've been really enjoying getting to know more about topics that I don't know as much about, things like hunting and fishing, which is not something that has really been in my background, and learning more and being able to program some shows about things that I do know a little more about. Gardening is a big hobby of mine. Also cooking, food, travel, all kinds of things like that. So I'm really enjoying both stepping into some topics that you've covered very well and in a very interesting way over the years, and hopefully introducing a little bit of my own flavor too.
I hope so. And you were an Illini.
Yes, I was for a couple of years, but I actually graduated as a Badger, so I saw the light. I started college at U of I Champaign, but I transferred up to UW-Madison, finished a bachelor's, and did a master's in history.
And have been here for the most part ever since.
Yes, I moved up here almost 23 years ago.
So lots of great experience about of living in Wisconsin and the wonderful things that we have here in the state. And Judith, it's wonderful to have you here.
I'm just thrilled to be here, Larry. Thanks so much.
And Judith will be back to the phones and answering those phones.
Yes, give us a call.
And so call her. Say hello to her. The number to call, by the way, if you want to say hi to Judith. And if you also have a question for Gary Engberg as we talk the outdoors, the number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. She also takes a look at your emails, so you can email us too at talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Judith Sears-Poisson, and she's doing a great job, Gary.
Sounds like it, but it's going to, like she said, it's hard to replace Jim.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I tell you what, we've got a lot of time here to talk about the outdoors, and there's always plenty to talk about. And let's turn to fishing first for a few minutes. Now, the ice is getting pretty thick out there.
The snow's pretty deep. There's a lot of big drifts. I'm not quite as adventurous as I used to be. I wait for people to kind of blaze a little trail right now instead of blazing my own. But it's been so bad with some of the drifts out on the local lakes in the Madison chain is some of the guides I know, Ronnie Bearfield and a couple other guys I work with, have been getting their ATVs and four-wheelers even stuck out on the lake. So, you know, wait till, you know, there's plenty of ice out there, but you still can get pressured cracks. And no matter how cold it is, there's still no such thing as safe ice.
Yeah.
You still have to really be careful. And, you know, especially like on a lake, like take, for instance, Lake Monona. You have, you know, the Madison Gas and Electric. So you have a warm water discharge. And you have to watch those areas and areas that have spring holes. You'll get pressure cracks this time of year. So you still have to be careful and watch the areas you fish.
Okay. Well, fishing is one area that we can certainly cover and talk some more about today. But I also wanted to mention eagles. And man, if you want to see eagles, this is really the year for it, isn't it?
This has been a fantastic year for eagle watching or for eagle viewing. I'm a member of the Fairy Bluff Eagle Council, and I helped them out a few weeks ago. We had our Bald Eagle Days in Sauk Prairie, and it was one of the great, you know, best years I can remember, and I've been there, I think, for 20 years, been helping out. But for whatever reason, the cold weather, the snow, eagles are concentrated. Their main forage or their main food is fish. And so they're going to concentrate themselves below the air, below dams in most areas where the water stays open. Prairie du Sac, you have the dam right there. The water stays open because you have the turbines going. There's always water moving. It doesn't freeze up, at least. Right now, you probably can go a mile and a half to 2 miles downstream and still have open water. I live between Sauk City and Mazomanie. About from my backyard westward towards Spring Green is frozen up. It'll open up when we got some warm weather, I think, coming within the next few days. But she's pretty frozen up, so those birds are really concentrated. And I'll tell you, if you go up to Sauk City, you just take Highway 12 up from Madison. There's a viewing station between the two towns there where you can look overlooking Eagle Island, and there's been birds there every day and just anywhere in the area. I mean, you got to remember that even though they feed on fish most of the time, they also will feed on any carrion or if any roadkill. If they can find a deer that's dead, you know, they'll eat a lot of things. So you can find them all around in the countryside and the whole area. Especially now where we have some severely cold weather, you don't really want to. You want to watch them. And you can go just to the VFW park. You can go up to the dam. You can go downtown and view the birds very, very well from your vehicle. But you don't want to spook them right now and get out of your car to take pictures. Take pictures from inside your car, because every time you spook them off the roost, they're burning up energy. And this time of year, that's, you know, a very important thing. You want to let them, you know, on a cold day or bad weather day, an eagle might stay on their roost all day and not even leave it. Only 2% of their time is spent actually flying. All the other time is sitting on the roost, watching and looking, you know. So cold weather, they'll burn up energy, and you want to keep them there. But you can go up, and it's magnificent. They're starting to do their mating now where they're doing their acrobatics in the air. I was watching a pair behind my house, and they were tumbling, and, you know, they'll grab talons together and do their free fall through the air. And you can just it's just fantastic. And then in the 20 years or so that I've been up there, I think this is probably the best year. And I had people talk to me when I was at the Overlook during Eagle Days that said they've been coming up for 15 or 20 years, and that one day they saw more eagles than they had seen in all the other years combined. And the other thing, too, is that every other week, and you've talked to Jeb Barzin and Randy Jurowitz and everyone else works, we do an eagle count, part of the ongoing research, and I think we had our fourth or fifth largest eagle count a couple weeks ago in the 20 years that they've been doing it.
Oh, that's great news.
Especially considering they came back from, you know, 60s and 70s with DDT, where all their eggshells were breaking because of, you know, farm chemicals used, and they've just made a great comeback.
You know, you mentioned the eagles eating and the fact that they have to sit and you know, rest and save their energy. That also applies to some extent to our birds, and if you're feeding birds in your backyard, you should keep those feeders full this time of year.
That's one of my, I really enjoy feeding birds, and, you know, beside looking at them, and they become dependent on you. I feed birds year-round, and once you start feeding birds, and particularly in the winter, keep feeding them because they will learn. I mean, they still can find natural foods and seeds, you know, and stuff in the wild to eat, but they'll get dependent upon you, you know, filling your feeders. And like I said, I'm going through 125, 150 pounds of black oiled sunflower seeds all week. So they've been eating, but, you know, they come and they're waiting, you know, like right now we're getting those little longer days, so I know what the time is because the birds are starting to chirp and, you know, they're saying time to fill the feeders. And when we had that big snowstorm a week ago, I had some 6 and 7 foot drifts in my backyard, and, you know, I'm not getting any younger. It took me, I think, 5 hours to shovel out from underneath all my feeders because, you know, I have feeders, but then so many of the birds still feed on the ground.
Yeah, and I have drifts in my backyard that, you know, I have these feeders hanging up in the trees, and The drifts are high enough now that the snow was within 6 inches. Yeah. So I got like 5 foot drifts in my backyard. It was amazing.
Well, I didn't use a snowblower. I had to shovel it all out myself, and it was a job. But I'll tell you, when all of a sudden you'll see, sometimes I'll have 30 cardinals at one time.
Oh boy!
I get a lot of times, unless there's a hawk will come around, then you won't see any birds for a while. But that's part of nature. But it's just fantastic of the birds that stay around here, and just to know that they exist in this type of weather. It's amazing.
Gary Engberg, our guest today, professional tournament angler and fishing guide, avid conservationist and sportsman, advocates for getting kids involved in the outdoors. I'm sure we'll visit about that as well. He's got a blog at GaryEngbergOutdoors.com, and I hope you'll take a look at that as well. And if you have some questions for Gary or some comments, what have you been doing in the outdoors the last week or two? What's it like out there where you are? You hunt or fish, at least fishing right now in the wintertime. What do you like to go for? Do you have some questions about that? I hope you'll join in. Maybe some questions about our birds. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or go ahead and email us at talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. Sturgeon season coming up pretty quickly here.
This weekend it opens up. It opens up on Lake Winnebago. It's the only one of the few. Wisconsin is one of the few states where you actually have a sturgeon spearing season, and it's very, very controlled and managed. Ron Brook has done a fantastic job. He's out of the DNR office in Fond du Lac or Appleton, and. Mm-hmm. They have done well. You've seen the people of the sturgeon. Is that the name of the book?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic book. If you want to see a nice cocktail table book or a beautiful book with pictures and the story about the whole sturgeon going back 100 years or more, it's a fantastic book. But this week in the sturgeon season does open on Lake Winnebago and the upper lakes. Unlimited amount of permits. Tags they have for the lower lakes. The main lake is Lake Winnebago, and if people haven't been there, it's a huge lake, 10, 11 miles wide, almost 30 miles long. On the opening weekend, there'll be probably 5,000-6,000 shanties will be out there with people spearing. They can start drilling their holes. I think they're limited on the number of square inches your hole can be. They can start cutting holes this Thursday. And the main problem that I got an email the other day from Ron, and he said that it's just keeping the lake open because they actually have regular roads out there and bridges to go over pressure cracks. And, the local fishing clubs have done a fantastic job to keep it open for people to be able to drive and so they can get to their shanties. But it's a very unique sport. It's been around a long time, to sit in a enclosed, dark little shanty for hours upon hours where you have a decoy, but a lot of people make their own little decoys that they'll drop down in the hole and sit there with a 5-6-prong spear waiting for a sturgeon to go by is pretty amazing. And they've done so well. Wisconsin's done fantastic in the sturgeon restoration and bringing these fish back. It's a 16-day season, but what they have, it's called harvest triggers. So if you get 90% adult females, you can have the season close within 24 hours. Yeah. And there's also these trigger caps for juveniles and for adults and for your total number. So, a couple of years ago, the season only lasted a couple of days.
Yeah.
And then if you maybe get bad weather, and the main thing that people have the sturgeon spears look for is clear water. And that's what right now the clear water on Winnebago is supposed to be at the south end and over on the east shore. Last year was on the east shore over on Stockbridge and Highcliff area where the hot areas. A couple of years ago it was on the west shore over by Wentz off of 45, which is halfway between Fond du Lac and Oshkosh. But it'll be great. People don't got to realize there's 250 pound sturgeon that they net in the Wolf River. They have a Wolf River cam in the spring when they're doing their netting and doing their research, and 200 pound fish. I mean, I've been lucky enough to see like an 82 inch, 170 pound fish myself. But it's amazing.
Gary Engberg, our guest today, as we take a look at the out of doors here in Wisconsin, what's going on in the world of wildlife. With Gary Engberg, Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Gary Engberg, our guest today here on the Ideas Net, as we talk about the wonderful world of Wisconsin's outdoors. Join us with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Eric in Hartley, Wisconsin, or Hatley, Wisconsin, excuse me, has a comment or a little story to tell maybe. Hi, Eric.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Great to have you putting on this program. Just wanted to tell you about an event that my daughters and I were able to witness. It was pretty amazing, out of almost a National Geographic type of show. We were driving to school in, one morning about 3 months ago, maybe 3.5 months ago, and we were able to witness a bald eagle basically interacting with a wolf walking across the field. And I'm only assuming that I was witnessing the eagle that must have had something fresh to eat on the field, and the wolf was about to take it. And they interacted in such a manner that the eagle was coming down to, with its talons extended, to basically deter this wolf from getting whatever he had there. And made multiple attempts until the wolf decided to try to leap up in the air and try to take the eagle out of the sky. It was amazing. I was able to, you know, share that with my 8-year-old and my 3-year-old, and you know, just get out there, everybody, and enjoy the outdoors, because there's some amazing things happening.
Those are the time you wish you had a camcorder with you.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So that's my comment, and I appreciate you guys.
Thanks much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Well, you don't see that unless you get out there.
It seems like, Larry, anytime I'm out, I usually always have either a camcorder or my camera with me, and the days I don't put it in the truck is the days when I see those awesome sights. So always keep your camera and camcorder with you.
Oh, boy. We had an email from Mary in Cedarburg who says she wants you to settle an argument between family members. The guys say you can look at a fish and tell if it's a male or a female. The girls think they're nuts. We're talking about mostly panfish, bluegills, crappies, walleye. And just so you know, we have no biologists, only recreational fishing enthusiasts.
All right. Well, first, on most fish now, you know, this is my opinion, on most fish without cleaning the fish and opening it up, I cannot tell if it's a male or female. Mm-hmm. On some fish, on bluegills, I can tell males, because they're going to have a bluegill is going to have a nice bump on the top of their forehead.
Yep.
And beside that, if you're dealing with crappies, I really don't know. And walleyes, unless I would clean them, because then, depending on the time of the year you clean them, you're going to, a lot of times you'll find eggs in them, or you'll find other reproductive organs inside the fish. But just on a pure visual look, I don't think so.
You can on those male bluegills, though.
Yep.
Yeah, those you can tell. Shannon in DeForest wants to know if you can see eagles year-round in the Sauk Prairie area, because she's a little cold-weather shy. She's not a cold-weather lass.
Well, I'll tell you, even though if you don't like the cold weather that much, there's a viewing stand between the two towns of Sauk City and Prairie du Sac, where the parking lot is, you can get within 10 yards of the viewing place where you're going to be able to see eagles, and you can always dash back to the car. But probably 99% of the eagles in the area are migratory. They're coming from northern Wisconsin, the UP, Ontario, Minnesota, and that's kind of the main area where these birds come from. They radio track some of these birds, and they follow them to different areas. But those are the main things. There are, though, I think 2 or 3 nests in the general Sauk City, Spring Green area. I have one probably a quarter mile down from me that they've nested like 3 years in a row in, and they've had eaglets, 2 and 3 eaglets there. But the best time is the winter, because, like I said, most of the birds are all there together. Yeah, and they're all migratory. And usually, except this time of the year, they're not so much, they're not really friendly, and they're not going to all be sitting in the same tree together.
No.
But during the winter, they'll put up with having someone next to them.
Let's go to Bob in Eau Claire next. Bob, hello.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you for having the program. Hey, I just wanted you to know a couple of things. You were talking about feeders a little earlier and bird activity. First of all, we've got cardinals and chickadees that are already singing their spring song, that friendly cheeseburger song from the chickadees.
Oh.
And when I walk the dog at night, I'm hearing great horned owls doing a lot of calling. And I know this is prime nesting time for the great horned owls. And then one last thing, at our feeder, we have got just hordes of doves, morning doves, coming upwards of 24 doves hanging around our yard.
I have the same thing. I'll have 2 or 3 dozen doves at a time. And doves are most people think of them as a migratory bird, and actually they are the number one game bird as far as numbers. I think there's 40 to 50 million doves in the United States. A lot of them are transient and will move through the area, but every year I have tons that just stay around and don't migrate.
Yeah.
What are the doves eating at your feeder?
Well, I feed both basically all the birds. I use black-oiled sunflower seeds and a little bit of cracked corn.
Okay. All right. Well, I put out some safflower.
They'd like that.
They're sort of eating the safflower. Obviously, they clean up the black oil. And then I also mix in a little bit of thistle. And then that brings the bullfinches and the, I lost it. It's not important. But at any rate.
Nuthatches?
Not so much the nuthatches. No, I'm trying to think of the dusky-eyed.
I'll tell you another thing that's really important now, too, is to put out is a little bit of suet, too, and you can talk to your butcher shop, and they can, because that's really high energy and that fat is really good. What I do, and because I have I have a couple acres of land, so I have a couple of deer carcasses where just with the rib cages that I hang from trees, and if you could see with the blue jays and the nuthatches, they'll end up cleaning that so there won't be a thing left by the springtime.
It was the juncos.
The juncos. Okay.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, the other thing the juncos did that I've found was amazing. We got an El Cheapo suet feeder from Menards. It was a little bell-shaped thing, and we hung out. And the juncos absolutely tore it apart. They ate all the seeds off of it, and it looked to me like they were actually eating some of the suet underneath the seeds. It was just amazing.
I found all my different species of woodpeckers, too,
love
suet.
It. Love suet. Thanks, Bob. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Sarah in Blair, Wisconsin, up next. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me. I was calling because the Blair Taylor School did a wonderful thing. There is an eagle nest between Blair and Ettrick, Wisconsin, and they put a live webcam, and you can view the eagles coming and going out of the nest from your computer.
I've seen a couple sites on the web, too, where they have an eagle cam after they've had their eaglets with the young in the nest, and it's pretty amazing to see them keep coming back and forth and bringing food to the young ones.
And, Sarah, I'm trying to remember, is it Kids for Eagles? Is that the site? I'm trying to remember.
I think it's Eagles, the number 4, kids.
Oh, the other way around. Eagles and the number 4, kids.com. I knew it was something like that. I couldn't remember exactly. Yeah, I went to that site, and it's a pretty cool site.
And you also, I think the other one, too, that is eaglecam.com. Check that one out, too.
Yeah.
I know my kids were pretty impressed on, I want to say it was Saturday morning, we caught the eagle in there eating a pigeon.
Ah.
They were pretty impressed with seeing it up close and personal, seeing it that.
It's a pretty cool project, and the Blair School District got approval or worked with the DNR on this and got this set up, and it's been an amazing educational experience for everybody involved. Thanks, Sarah.
See, another thing you have, I mentioned the eagles, their main forage or food that they eat is basically fish, but they will eat any carrion or anything else, if that's what's around. But the Wisconsin River has gizzard shad, and they were gone. They got wiped out almost a couple years ago, and I talked to Gene Van Dyke, who's the DNR fisheries manager for the Wisconsin River. He said he didn't know when the shad would come back. He said it might be a year or two, or it might be 10 years. Well, the shad are back, and the shad is actually an invasive species, not used to the real cold water, and there will be a big die-off like there is, you know, has been all fall mm-hmm. and winter now, and so that's one of the main things they're eating.
Jackie and Madison, on to you. Oh,
yeah, hi, good morning. Your guest has mentioned, I guess, almost twice now about eagles being opportunists in terms of their eating habits. Are there any fish, are there any types of eagles or other raptors that eat fish only?
Well, osprey.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Osprey would be the one, and I don't think any hawks do. I think hawks basically are staying with red meat and, you know, smaller game, rabbits and mice and squirrels and stuff like that. But
and the eagles?
Eagles, eagles will take, I see regularly, I'll see eagles will be right next to like a Canadian goose or a mallard duck or something, and usually they don't even care about them. And I don't know if it got to a dire straits where they were starving, I'm sure that they would eat anything they could, but they really prefer to eat fish.
Yeah. I did see an eagle on Monona take a goose a couple of years back.
Wow.
And if you're like in northern Wisconsin, like there's some eagles that, you know, there's enough open water, like if you go up to Vilas, Iron County, where the eagles will stay up there year-round. Mm-hmm. You can be driving down the road, and you'll see a deer or a roadkill, mm-hmm. and there'll be four or five eagles sitting on top of it eating. Oh. So they're not against red meat either.
But they do prefer the fish, yes?
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Laura in Arpin says, well, there's no better cure for cabin fever than getting outside, even in Wisconsin winter. About 9 years ago, I wove my own snowshoes, and this winter they finally got varnished. This is a great winter for snowshoeing. Encourages everyone to give it a try. If you can walk, you can snowshoe. Well, it's a great, quiet exercise. Teaches us that it's possible to be very warm out in the cold, even in a cold, crisp day.
That's one of those. Right. That's one of those good silent sports, and that's really, I've seen this year, companies have come out and matter of fact, a couple winters ago, I was up in northern Wisconsin to see, to go into a bear cave with the DNR, a bear that was hibernating that had young, and also to check on wolves and the elk with Lane Stoll, who was mm-hmm. in charge of the project up there for the DNR. And it's just, he makes, anyway, he's up there all winter with the DNR. He makes an excellent snowshoe, but the old school wood ones. But I've seen stores now, Wilderness Fish and Game, I saw in Sauk City, they're making now like shorter, you know, more compact snowshoes that are relatively, you know, probably in the $50 to $75 range that anyone could use. And I'm sure it's, you know, great exercise for anyone.
Yeah, absolutely. And those big long ones still work the best on a powdery snow. That's for sure. Gina from northern Minnesota wonders about feeding squirrels and what's the best thing to feed them.
I don't have to worry about feeding mine.
Mine
get all my feeders no matter what kind of baffles or whatever I get. I haven't found anything yet that's squirrel proof. But I'll tell you, squirrels really like any type of nuts. Peanuts, they'll go nuts over. They'll eat whole corn, shell corn. They'll eat any of those things. But mine are gorging themselves on black oil sunflower seeds right now. And the other night, I was happened to look out just before dark, and I had three possums underneath the feeder too. So beside birds, I feed squirrels, possums, raccoons.
We get raccoons and possums too. Possum too. Robin in Portage, let's go to you next. Hi, Robin. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Gary and Larry.
Morning.
Morning.
My question is, last summer mid-May, I had a black bear in my backyard. My property is adjacent to woods and then beyond that marsh. I know the bear had been in the area, and this is right in the city of Portage, for at least 3 days. What I'm wondering is, this bear, I took a lot of photographs. He was in the yard for about 2 hours. Anyway, I'm wondering, am I going to possibly see bear coming to my area again? Are they familiar with where they've been and come back to the same place. They did have wildlife that they ate. I know that.
Well, the bear population in the state of Wisconsin has really exploded. I mean, there is, they just recently, I mean, the number of bear permits for the hunting season is, has just gone up tremendously. But the overall population of bears is just really, really increased. And what's happening is I think bears are getting crowded, especially your younger males in some areas, and so they're getting pushed a little bit farther south. And I think what they do is, like, we have them in my area too, and, you know, and I'm only 30-some miles out of Madison. But I think the young males get, and they follow the river. I think they actually follow the river is their way of navigation down from northern Wisconsin. But I would think that you're probably going to have a bear population from the middle of the state north. And I mean, and where you're going to see bears regularly, and they're probably going to take up and stake out their own territories.
Okay. Well, I know there's a female and two cubs over in Sauk. They've been sighted many times. But now over here in Portage, we haven't seen any of the bears since summer.
Mm-hmm.
And there were several around.
Well, they're hibernating now.
Yeah, okay. But one of the things, too, about their hibernation, and it's not always, they don't always have a great cave or something that they go in, or an old log. Sometimes they just might fall, you know, and they're not totally asleep either. Because I was in, when I was up north and in with one hibernating that had a couple of cubs, we were in there to give her some shots and to put a tag on, and she started getting restless and moving around, and you've never seen some people move so quick in your life because they're not totally asleep, and on a warm, sunny day, they can, you know, they might get up and move around a little bit, but they're not always in, you know, a perfect little cave or a hollow-out log. You know, they're pretty hardy.
Okay, so I probably can expect to see them again.
I don't think, let's put it this way, I know that the DNR has moved some traps down to this part of the state, so they have to be a lot more prevalent, and I just think with the way the population has exploded in them, and I think we're going to see them a lot more, they're going to be more common down here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
And so I should be seeing about what time, you know, in the spring, about what time should they be up and about?
Oh, I would say they're going to be up by the end of March or April.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin, for calling. Appreciate it. And let's turn to Patty in Dubuque, Iowa next. Hi, Patty.
Hi. I'm thinking more summer. We are vacationing up on Kangaroo Lake by Bailey's Harbor and just wanting to know a little bit about the fishing on that lake and if there's ring perch there and where.
What's the name of the lake?
Kangaroo Lake.
I haven't fished it myself, but the best thing I would do, I would just do a Google search on the lake or get yourself, the DNR puts out a real nice book. It has every lake in the state by county. You can look at it. It'll tell you your maximum depth. It'll tell you the species and everything that are in it. And then after you can do that, you can find on the web, you can find maps of most of these lakes. And from there, you can, you know, kind of eliminate on most lakes. If you look at even a topographic map that has your various contours, you can look at it and you can see the areas that are going to be your you know, primaries of fish. And most of the time, if you look at a map, you can probably take 80-90% of the lake and just don't even worry about it. And what you're looking for mainly are going to be your drop offs, your mid lake type of structures, rock piles out in your lake, anywhere where you have, you might go from 5 to 15 feet in a real short distance. Those are going to be the type of areas. And then anywhere you have weeds. Weeds are going to hold any type of species of fish. They're going to hold panfish. They're going to have, because you got panfish there, you're going to have northern pike or muskie are going to be close in the area. So just do a little bit of research. And, you know, if you want me to, send me an email and I'll be glad to check it out and tell you some places to try.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for calling. And I assume she could go to your blog, right?
Yep.
So the blog is Gary. I just went to it, as a matter of fact. A nice shot of a rooster pheasant there, and a shot of you doing a live remote from your radio show. So
that's Scott Hassett, the old DNR secretary.
Ah, there we go. So the website is Gary Engberg. Outdoors.com, and Gary is normal Gary, G-A-R-Y, Engberg, E-N-G-B-E-R-G, EngbergOutdoors.com. Take a look at that site, that blog, and there's talking about feeding wildlife in the wintertime. I see there. Let's take a look at our next caller here, Emily at Minocqua, up next. Hi, Emily.
Hi, this is a pleasure. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Thank you.
My question is pertaining to, we have free-range chickens, and we've never had a problem with any kind of animals getting them until fall, where one disappeared, and we, you know, kept a lookout, didn't see anything, and then we found that one, and it was obviously by some kind of bird of prey. My concern is, and we lost another one, now I locked them up. I don't want them, I don't want to lose them this winter.
Yeah.
My concern is are these birds, are they just migrating and come to the area? Now are they going to stay that they see that there's, you know, a free meal?
No.
Or am I going to have to worry about this consistently or just through the season?
So you're sure it was a bird?
Yeah, because the carcass that we'd found, you know, we have wolves, we have less, but it was picked apart and it wasn't ripped apart. And it must have been a smaller bird because it would probably carried it somewhere if it wasn't. And it just, I mean, I'm not positive, but I, right after that I started seeing hawks, and I don't know if maybe I was a little bit more vigilant afterwards, but now I'm just afraid that he's hanging out around here.
I would think it would probably be a hawk or an owl.
Okay.
Would be my best guess. And I don't know as far as what they have as far as retaining their any memory or anything like that, but if they have a spot where they have had success eating and finding food, I'm sure that they're going to remember where that spot or location is. And I mean, I've farmed too, and I had chickens and stuff running all over the place, and you would lose them now and then. But I just think probably, you know, maybe just put up like some pie tins and just put up some things that make noise, maybe in the wind and things, you know, where you can just have something that might, you know, distract and draw them away. You know,
okay.
I would try something like that, or even a flag or something blowing in the wind, something that's just going to, you know, keep them away. But probably in the winter for sure, because you're going to, you know, your birds aren't going to be able to go over such a large area and they're going to be concentrated. I might keep them in the winter.
Right. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. The other option, fence them in and cover that top of the fence.
Cover the top. That's what I used to do with my pheasants.
Yeah,
you know, that was the main thing. You can buy some real, you know, nice netting. I used to have to use chicken wire, but now they make a synthetic netting that works real well.
Yeah, and it's not all that expensive either. No. Let's go to Alice in Delavan next. Alice, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. Thank you. I have two quickish questions. I wonder what turtles do in the winter. And I also was wondering, if we didn't have these dams keeping the rivers, then would eagles just go south until it's not frozen?
They would go somewhere where there's open water. And I'll tell you another good place to watch eagles is in Prairie du Chien on the Mississippi River. And there, too, you're dealing with a dam system and a lot of open water. And that's another good place if you'd want to spot, you know, spot eagles. But dams, even if you wouldn't have dams, there's still going to be backwater areas, but most of those are probably going to freeze up. It just depends on the severity a lot of times of your winter. And, you know, some winters I don't even have, I never have a blockage on my part of the river where I live. But this year, since it's been cold, but the river then can open up where we have some warmer weather down the road in about, I think, 4 or 5 days where we're going to be, you know, 30 to 40 for a few days. And a couple of days, the river will open back up because there's enough current. I think the Wisconsin River flows at about 4 or 5 miles an hour. And a lot of it depends on how much water you have and flow. But the dam system is very important. In the dam, I know the dam at Prairie du Sac was built about 1950, and we get a lot of power. Alliant Energy owns all of the dams up and down the system, and, you know, it's a main energy source.
Yeah, and
and they are good people. They do a lot of nice things as far as they've helped a lot with our eagle work. If you go between Sauk City and Devil's Head Ski Place. They have a nice area, marsh area there for cross-country skiing, for bird watching, for photography, outdoor photography. You know, they contribute back to the society.
Gary Engberg, our guest today, as we talk about things to do in the out-of-doors here in Wisconsin, zeroing in on birds and fishing and snowshoeing, all kinds of things here. Join in with your questions or comments or suggestions at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Gary Engberg, our guest today, professional tournament angler and fishing guide, conservationist and sportsman. He blogs at GaryEngbergOutdoors.com. Great to have him with us again. Tom in Wyawega up next. Tom, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I've got a little bait shop on the Wolf River down by Gill's Landing. And a few years ago, the Department of Natural Resources imposed a moratorium on mineral harvesting in quite a bit of state water, not just around me, but
around me too.
Quite a broad range of areas. But with the moratorium on native bait harvesting as a consequence, we've been importing a lot of minnows from Arkansas. And now we're worried about the spread of Asian carp species. And really, you couldn't plan a better way to spread them around than to bring them up from Arkansas fish farms.
Well, the people that I know who are one of the larger bait distributors, the Gullens out of Dodgeville, they have a real nice operation. And I know that they have a lot of ponds down in Missouri and Arkansas, too. I think the main concern right now as far as your big mouth or your Asian carp is coming up, you know, through the Illinois River and then the Chicago Sanitary, you know, canal and then getting into Lake Michigan. And that's, you know, they've been working hard in the last year or so trying to figure out what they're going to do in there, and they're trying to get a compact with all the various Great Lake states and also Ontario to do something about it. And I haven't seen what they've come up with. But I know exactly what you mean because I'm a fishing guide, and so I usually during the summer most of my bait is going to be either seined or trapped, and I can't do that now, and I haven't been able to do it because you know since the moratorium, you know, same thing on the Mississippi River and anywhere you go, and for people who are used to seining their bait, and you know, you say match the hatch or use, you know, that's my best bait is usually what's in the river.
Yeah.
And I found the same problem. But anytime you buy bait, like I'm going to, you know, if I go and buy bait, you're going to find some bullheads or something in there all the time that isn't what you bought.
Yeah.
And it's easy, like you said, it's very easy to have that transfer. And I think maybe that's a good idea or that's something that maybe someone should bring up at the spring hearings.
Yeah.
I try and you know, bring my customers up to date on this, but I watch my minnows and I look through them, but I mean, there's other species like mosquito fish. And I think really in our haste to, keep VHS out, we're bringing in really a potentially much bigger problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no doubt about it. And I'm not sure what's going to be done about it, but, it
something to bring up at the spring hearings.
Yep.
That's for sure. Thanks, Tom, for calling. Appreciate it. Mike in Southwest Wisconsin up next. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. Very nice show you got here.
Thank you.
Say, I have a pair of barred owls nesting in the my pine trees above on the along the bluff here and above my house. And since the snowfall down this way is really, we got a lot of snow on the ground and it's covering. There's no bare ground. And their diet is largely mice
or voles.
Yeah, and so is there anything we can put out to help feed them, the poor things? I don't imagine they get much of a diet now.
I have something on my blog that's very similar to this, talking about actually artificial feeding in the long run really doesn't do much and is kind of isn't really advised. And you know, there still is a lot of stuff out there, even though maybe you don't see it. They still can find things, and you know, they'll find something to eat, or they'll move to where there is some food. But artificial feeding, where they've tried it on you know, larger animals, you're talking about maybe elk and deer, but then you know, working your way down, it's kind of, you know, it doesn't work out in the long run.
Mm.
I see.
Take a look on my blog and read the story, and it gives you a little bit of information on it. But artificial feeding just doesn't seem to make it.
If you're not behind, I've got a comment, too.
Sure.
Okay.
These people that called in about the bird feeders, what I do, I can't always keep everything filled, and sometimes by the time I get back to it, if you fill them, you don't see birds back there for half a day or something. So what I do is I call them in. If I get the chickadees and the nuthatches and titmice and some of them small ones coming in, that seems like that draws the other ones, and I just replicate the woodpecker call and the chickadee call, and I bet you in just a couple of minutes they're back there.
That's a great idea.
Like 10 chickadees all of the swarm, they're just hoarding in down on.
I had
put out and they just love it.
Yesterday I was refilling some feeders, and a guy got back in the house, and I sat down at my desk, and I probably wasn't sitting down for 2 or 3 minutes, and it was like a deluge. They came from everywhere. I even had crows coming to my yard. But they have to eat, too.
Yeah, they do. Yep. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. All right. Well, I tell you what, we got Bob in Dubuque, Iowa, up next. Hi, Bob.
Yeah. Hi, Gary and Larry.
Hi, Bob.
Great show here.
Thank you.
I run Green Valley Kennels in Dubuque, Iowa. I train bird dogs for clients for about 30 years here now.
All and, species?
Gary, I understand from listening to you, you're raising pheasants. So.
Oh, I have in the past. I've raised a lot of pheasants. I can tell you good and bad. What type of hunting dogs do you raise?
Oh, pointers and
pointers?
Setters. Yeah,
okay.
A lot of pointers. I'm a retired school teacher, but been doing this for 30 years now, and I take a half a dozen dogs, and that's about it. This the reason I called was when you mentioned pheasants. I have had my clients tell me that here in Iowa, the pheasant hunting has been absolutely terrible.
Brutal.
They take these young puppies out that had been trained, and they just can't find any birds. And I would make the suggestion, if you have a nice hunting dog that you enjoy, and you just can't find any birds, until March 31st,
Game Farm,
Iowa, you can go to a game preserve, and you can basically hunt these birds right up till March 31st, and that way you get your dog out, and he has a little fun, and you get a good pheasant dinner and that type of thing.
Well, like you said, the important thing is that the young dog is getting to see or getting to smell birds.
You sound like a dog.
Real birds. I've raised Labradors for 30 years. So
okay.
I can tell you about them, and I, you know, with pheasants, and I've had 500 pheasants loose in my backyard, too. And the thing about that is they wanted to get back inside the pen. They didn't want to go anywhere. But what's happened in Iowa is they've lost probably 40 to 50% of their CRP land, I think, in the last 5 years and the recent signups, mainly because of ethanol production and people want
higher corn prices.
Higher corn prices, and people want to plow up and get as much corn as they can. I used to go to a retired school teacher friend of mine in the Waterloo area, 200 miles from my door. I'd go there and just hunt for the day. And I talked to him this year, and he said he hadn't seen a pheasant the whole year. So
yeah,
and Iowa used to be one of the states.
The states, yeah.
The states. You take South Dakota, Iowa, Nebraska. Those states always used to harvest at least 1 million pheasants. South Dakota, I think a year ago, did 2 million pheasants. Now I think Iowa's down to 300,000, and that's about what Wisconsin is, and
yeah.
We don't see many wild roosters around here.
Yeah, I've never seen it worse, Gary, than it has been in the last.
Well,
it's
Pheasants Forever. It's probably one of the greatest conservation groups around, and they'll tell you the main thing is habitat.
There you go.
And I'll come back if you get, you know, if you have a chance. If people don't plow up everything, birds will come back.
Yep. There you go. Thanks, Bob, for calling. Glenn in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Larry. Gary.
Hi, Glenn.
Hey, I was listening. I'm a truck driver out of Iowa.
Got you.
Yeah. I was listening to Iowa Public Radio. Somebody was talking about the eagles coming back, and yet some of them are getting sick from lead poisoning, from lead shot.
Lead shot.
And a lady hunter called in and said she changed to copper shot.
Well, there's a lot of different things that they're trying to get people to use. They're using bismuth. They're using, I think, tungsten, a lot of different alternatives. And there's no doubt that lead poisoning, I mean, it's affected ducks. It's affected all waterfowl, eagles real bad. And I think they are trying to cut back and find alternatives. It's tough to go in the arms industry or the ammunition industry and all of a sudden change over everything. But I know that if you're on most state lands now and it doesn't make any difference whether or not what you're hunting, you still have to use steel shot now.
Yeah.
I think.
So they're trying to get away from the lead.
Yeah, they are trying to get away from it.
And they're also, as long as we're talking about lead, they're trying to do the same thing in fishing equipment as far as jig heads and stuff like that. They're trying to go to different substances, and bismuth, like I said, is the one they're trying to use in place of lead.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks very much for calling, Glenn. Appreciate your call. We're talking about the out-of-doors today, what's going on in Wisconsin and elsewhere with Gary Engberg, and he'll be with us right up until 12:30 today.
You got me all day.
I got you all day here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking about the great outdoors today with Gary Engberg, professional angler and fishing guide, avid conservationist. Got his own blog at GaryEngbergOutdoors.com. I hope you'll take a look at it. And here to answer your questions and comments and comment on your comments here on the Ideas Net at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@WPR.org. Gary, I got a note from Tim Isley, and I wanted to remind everybody that the Wisconsin Waterfowl Hunters Conference is March 4th and 5th in Stevens Point. It's one of the best conferences. It's independent, put on by waterfowl hunters, and they have speakers talking about current issues in waterfowl hunting and management and research. So some good research topics coming up. A legislative update from George Meyer. I've got hunting around the world, waterfowl hunting around the world with Pat Pitt. Duck calling tips. There's land acquisition by conservation organizations. Dave Carlson's talking about that. So there's lots there. It's just $20 to attend in advance, $25 at the door. So you can go to the Wisconsin Outdoor News website. Probably is the simplest way to do it. Just go to Wisconsin Outdoor News website, and you're going to find out a whole lot more about that.
Tim's a good man.
Yeah, he's a very good guy.
So is good old Dave Carlson. You got all my friends.
Oh, man. Well, it's March 4th and 5th in Stevens Point, Wisconsin Waterfowl Hunters Conference. Let's take a look at what Ann's got to say next. Ann's in Madison. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Well, I've been feeding the birds and the squirrels and anything else that happens along. It's good entertainment for the cats who sit on the cat tree by the window. And the other night, I was getting up at about 4 o'clock to get my paper, and I looked at the seeds and the nuts that I put under a tree, and I saw four long ears hopping. And I didn't realize, I don't believe I've ever seen rabbits feeding with any of the other animals. And I guess they have to get up early.
Rabbits are pretty nocturnal.
They have to leave in a hurry if they value their lives. But I wondered what their feeding habits were, and what's the best thing to give rabbits besides the lettuce?
Well, rabbits will probably eat about any type of nut or seed there is.
Yeah.
I mean,
plenty active.
Their diet is pretty wide, you know. And I don't ever see a rabbit at my place, and I have 8 large feeding areas, and I never see a rabbit ever during the day. But I always will see rabbit tracks in the morning. So they're underneath something, or they found a little cubby hole somewhere. But I mean, peanuts. Roasted peanuts, not salted ones, but roasted peanuts, shell corn, sunflower seeds, most of those things they'll eat. They're very opportunistic. And, well, but, you know, this time of year particularly, they'll eat about anything that you can put out there for them. Yeah. But they're there, but it's just that you don't see them because they're out at night.
Yep.
Yeah, I was so surprised.
Thanks for calling, Ann. Appreciate it. Sue from Arborvitae says that she puts out, for morning doves, she puts out Proso Millet, and the morning doves love Proso Millet.
Yeah, so. I think that's a pretty good buck. It's about like Niger seed, too.
Yeah, it's expensive. Joe and Hayward, on to you now. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Larry. My daughter makes suet cakes, and I thought maybe some of the listeners would like the recipe.
Love it.
I don't have the exact recipe, but I know she uses a pound of lard, and she melts it, and then she adds half of a 18-ounce jar of crunchy peanut butter, and then 2 cups of black oil sunflower seeds, and then I think like one cup maybe of broken up eggshells, and then some bread cubes to bring it to a good consistency, and then she pours that into a 9x13 pan and lets it cool, and then cuts it into 6 pieces, and each of those squares fits into one of those commercial suet cages. And I think honey might be a good addition to that, too.
I know that peanut butter works real well, and you just have to, like you said, you use the bread, something to bring it all together and thicken it a little bit.
Yeah.
But it works out. I mean, it's very inexpensive, and you can even get some fat from your butcher usually for about nothing, and it's not a hard project or hard to do, and, you know, probably you can adjust, you know, look in a good bird book and just depending on what type of species you're feeding, just find what they would recommend as far as what their preference is in foods and just use that in with your fat.
I was going to make them with leftover bacon grease and mix that with some of that beef suet that you get in the store, which, by the way, isn't free. They charge you for that. You know?
You might find me at your feeder the way it sounds. It sounds pretty good.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks a lot for calling. Ron in Mason, Wisconsin, up next. Ron, hi.
Yeah, hi, fellas.
Hi, Ron.
I was just thinking the only way you're going to get rid of those Asian carp is totally eradicate them. Otherwise, you're going to have your eagles and other carrion animals that eat carrion track it into the lakes.
Well, people have a pond or a farm pond or a little pond in their backyard, and they never have stocked it with fish, and they'll wonder, well, how did all of a sudden, you know, there's fish in there? Well, it comes in from birds, waterfowl, other types of birds. You know, they'll get on the eggs and they'll bring the eggs in and on their feet, and that's how you get, you know, different species of fish to spread. And I'm sure that's possible with the carp. And, you know, it's going to be a big project to try and eradicate them because those fish have moved all the way up that Illinois River, and they're, you know, I think they found their DNA on the other side, actually, of the barrier, you know, that would lead into Lake Michigan.
Yes, they have.
And if they get it in the Great Lakes, that'll be, you know, if you thought the lamprey problem was a disaster, this will be worse because people don't realize how huge the sport fishing industry is in the Great Lakes.
Oh, yeah, great. Yeah. Exactly. So they're going to have to eradicate them, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I just hope they can find a way how to do it.
Yeah. Yep. Thanks, Ron.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Barbara in Milwaukee, we're on to you now. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. I'm really enjoying the program.
Thank you.
And I would just like to give a plug to some of the in-city things in Milwaukee. You don't have to go out miles away from the city to enjoy nature. Milwaukee County has such a great park system. We've got Weir Nature Center in Whitnall Park. There's 2 urban ecology sites where they do nature programs and nature education, and we have a state forest in the city of Milwaukee. It's roughly on 43rd and Silver Spring, and it's Havenwood State Forest. They do nature education and programs. You can borrow snowshoes there 6 days a week and go snowshoeing on 237 acres.
That's some great information, and it's really nice to tell people that they don't have to drive, especially now with gas, you know, going up there. They don't have to drive that far. I mean, in Madison, we have the Arboretum. You know, we have, you know, some lucky nature areas, too. And if you will check, and I'm sure if you look, you know, on, you know, I hate to keep saying do a Google search, but if you look in different areas, you can find out that there's a lot of things a lot closer to you than you think.
Yeah.
Right. And Havenwood has a Winter Nature Fest coming up on Saturday, February 19th from 10 till 4. And the great thing about the programs there is that 99% of them are absolutely free. They do have a few items, for example, to make your own suet feeder. It's $5 for the materials, but just about every other activity there is going to be free, and they have a Friends website, friendsofhavenwoods.org, and all the information would be there.
And you have a lot of activities, too, at a lot of the state parks that people should take advantage of. And I know earlier in the year there was some candlelight skiing at some of the different state parks that had to get canceled because of lack of snow, which will not happen now. But check on your DNR website, too, because I know, like, Devil's Lake State Park and wherever, you know, look for one in your area, and you'll see that there's a lot of activities, too, and they are basically free.
And it's February 19th, and go to Friends of Havenwood?
That's correct.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Barb.
Appreciate the call. We finally have some open lines again, so we can get you on reasonably quickly. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Bill in Sun Prairie, we're on to you now. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Hi, Bill.
When we were, some of us older people who listen to the show, when we were young, we formed a group called Fish and Wildlife Unlimited, and we were on television and radio. And by the way, the federal government took that Fish and Wildlife and used it. They called themselves the Fish and Federal Fish and Wildlife Service. But in any event, we spoke out in behalf not only of habitat, but the need for predator and raptor control. And the problem with this nice radio network and a lot of radio stations and a nice gentleman like you is that you and the radio station stress the habitat, but you dare not talk about the need for controlling, for example, bald eagles. And I'm going to end here. I came across once, for example, trying to figure out what the squawking was all about. A bald eagle had landed on a young deer, poked out its eyes.
Yeah, well, you know.
That's nature.
Yeah, you know, that's nature. Comment on that, Gary?
I'm not going to. That's a tough one, man. I don't think that you can have any type of season or I mean, even if you go out west, cranes they shoot and they have hunting seasons on, you know, on sandhill cranes and stuff. And I kind of am against it. I mean, everyone has their opinion. There might be problems in areas on predators, you know, especially raptors, you know, but that happens in the nature. I mean, I watch just in my little backyard, I'll see, you know, a sharpshin hawk will come in and it'll grab a junco or a bird, but that happens naturally in nature, and those things are going to happen. And I don't know if we should get involved in that type of control.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you.
Nathaniel and Kewaskum, we're going to go to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi there. Let's talk ice fishing for crappie.
All right.
First of all, I was wondering if you had any kind of – I'm one of these poor souls that has to sit on a bucket, and – I wonder if you have any kind of neat
back to the wind.
Yeah. Well, okay, there's a good one. Don't pee into it either. But I've been having really good luck with a treble hook on fathead minnows and slip bobbers on the certain lake I'm fishing. I've been having really great luck with it. Do you know any tips or any other kind of products other than that little slip bobber knot that you put on? Because that thing freezes up, and I can't strip line off my reel, and it becomes – I spend more time futzing around with the line.
I really don't know of anything besides, you know, the normal slip bobber knot, and I'm just trying to, you know, you might have to try and experiment a little bit and try a few things yourself and see what'll work.
I had read about,
but you have to use if you use a spring bobber on your rod that doesn't, you have to use a regular float in the water.
Yeah, the spring bobber doesn't.
It's not sensitive enough, or they don't like it.
It's not sensitive enough, and they want to take it further. What's the problem with the spring bobber is I'm forced to set the hook too early and I don't have the fish. The second I switch to slip bobbers, I'm catching every one because I literally let that bobber go completely out of sight before I set the hook.
What size treble?
10.
10, okay.
And then
yeah, that's something, you know, I get by basically with a slip bobber in most of my fishing, and I haven't had a problem. The only time I use a regular float is if I'm up at Devil's Lake, which is north of us here, when I'm jigging for trout or using that for trout. I seem to not miss fish, and like you said, I wait until the bobber's all the way down. But
right.
I've been lucky enough most of the time that I get to fish. I'm looking at a video camera, and you can see them. those crappies or bluegills will be like a 16th of an inch away from your bait, and some days they just don't want to touch it, you know. Just sometimes you got to change your jigging cadence. Sometimes, you know, those fish will, you know, they'll be up and down in the water column. Some days they're just not active. You know, that's fishing. I mean, we all know that, and you don't always, you know, get your limit every day, but I would just experiment and try, and, you know, maybe there's something that should be on the market. Maybe that's how you can get yourself a nice shanty.
that too. I had one other quick question about fish sexes, if we have time.
Sure.
I've taken about, over the last couple trips there, I've taken about 35 fish out of this lake I'm fishing.
Okay.
And only three, upon queening them, only three of them have been males. And I'm wondering if you know anything about that.
Not offhand, but I know that it's possible to fish out an area. You know, you think people, you know, you don't think you can catch enough fish. And I think that actually it's 25 now on panfish, and I wouldn't mind seeing it actually down to 15 or 20, because I've seen big bodies of water, you know, totally get fished out. And this, I'll give you an example. The Triangle area here in Madison and Brittingham Park, Monona Bay area, you know, like probably the first 2 months of the season, I mean, there were hundreds of people there, and everyone could go there. You know, a lot of the fish are small. You'd have to sort through them. But the Yahara Fishing Club had their Children's Fishing Day a couple weeks ago, and there were hundreds of children on the ice who got free rods and reels from the club, and club members and everyone fishing. There were two fish caught all day.
Oh.
And that's a place where, I mean, if I told anyone somewhere they just want to go catch some fish or take the kids out, you know, because that's the most important thing is to have, you know, when you're trying to introduce children to fishing, is to get them to tug something tugging on your line. But only two fish with hundreds of people. And I'm talking about, you know, people must have taken thousands and thousands out there. So, you know, you got to watch it.
There's
that
a limit.
Way.
Yeah. There's a limit.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
But
a
try
lot
that invention.
Work on it. Work on it, Nathaniel. Carson in Independence, Wisconsin. Hi.
Yeah, good afternoon. Say, I'm a big fan of the show. I always learn something interesting. But I got a question about the homemade suet. I'm a big fan of bacon with my breakfast eggs, and I always save the bacon fat, so I was thinking about using that.
Sure.
But I was a little bit concerned. You know, they say it maybe it's not real healthy for humans, and with the nitrates and sugars, and so is that a concern for feeding the birds?
I don't know if there has ever, I've never heard of anything, but I don't know if there's ever been a study done, and I don't know if how you would actually
do it,
because I don't think they could send you back a questionnaire. But I think bacon fat would be fine.
Oh, well, good news. Thank you.
Yep,
it's recycling.
Yep, you're recycling. I wouldn't worry about it. I'd use it. Carl in Hudson, it's on to you now. Hi, Carl.
Hi, nice show.
Thanks
Carl.
The good guest you have on there. How important are bird baths in the wintertime? I've got one out there. I haven't seen anything in it this year.
And you have a heater on it and it's open and everything?
Yep. That's right by the bird feeder.
I'm sure that the birds like it and are going to use it, but see, I live on on a body of water on a river, so they don't have to worry too much around me, but I think it's probably very important. I mean, they have to, you know, obtain, you know, water or moisture some way.
I think one of the problems sometimes with the feed or the bird baths is that you need to have a little bit of motion on the, a little wave action on the, for the birds to actually see. That's one reason they might not use it. And another is, you know, they're pretty resourceful, and in most places in Wisconsin, a bird can fly probably not very far and find some water. So I think I had a bird bath, and I had it out and for a couple of years, a heated one, and I just never got any action on it, so I finally gave up on it.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering if I should just unplug the thing, because I have to have an extension cord, and sometimes the mice or squirrels or something chews on the cord.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I know. Been there.
Got a few tape marks on it.
Yeah, I gave it up. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Carl. Let's see here. We've got an email from Susie, been enjoying a couple of red squirrels or pine squirrels foraging the ground beneath their bird feeder since fall. At the shoveled edge of concrete surfaces of patio and driveway, there are tunnels which run under the snow and exit at ground level at the shoveled area. And she wonder what made those tunnels. I finally saw the red squirrels using these tunnels. After visiting the feeder, they disappeared into the hole. I don't know where they come out again. Do they burrow? You know, I mean, I would have thought something else.
Well, see, what I have, because I have, like, it's probably 5 feet high around my feeding areas with the snow that I've had to shovel, I have voles and moles.
Yeah, that's what
that'll go. I mean, you have so much insulation now with the, you know, with with the snow cover, you're probably, your frost depth is probably not that deep. And these are small type little holes, and I'm sure that's what, because they're there all, like, during the summer all the time eating, you know, the waste feed. So I'm sure that that's probably one of the cases. And I'm, you know, the squirrels are probably just, you know, using what they have there.
Yeah.
They're being
opportunistic.
Opportunistic is the word, Larry.
Scott in Iron Mountain, Michigan. Hi.
Hello. I'm an avid deer hunter, and I've heard, you know, in the past, you've heard stories on the CWD, chronic wasting disease.
Yes. Yep.
And I know they did a massive deer kill around the Madison and South area. Have they figured out what it was, and have they got it under control?
There was a lot of money spent, and really, it's not under, there still is, it's, I think the percentage is only like 2-3% or less. They found, you know, in the area here, it's the supposedly hot zone where it initially came up. But still, it's, you know, out in Colorado where it initially was found, you know, the prions, which are the proteins that it attaches to the soil, they've, you know, they're still there after, you know, from the 60s and 70s. And I think once you have it, it's going to be there. And I think it's something that you just have to learn to live with. I know that the state, you know, ended up spending a lot of money and maybe wasn't so well spent when they were trying to figure out what was going on. But, you know, it still is a problem. It's still around. I get press releases all the time, and it doesn't seem to be spreading. Like Pennsylvania, I just heard from, and they haven't had any incidents there. Indiana hasn't had any incidents. Northern Illinois had a few in some of the counties that border Wisconsin. But basically, it's kind of contained, and I'm not going to say it's under control, but it's manageable.
It's manageable. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. They sure would like to get rid of it, but that is probably not going to happen. Well, Gary, so what are you covering on your GaryEngbergOutdoors.com blog?
Well, I got a whole bunch of nice pictures I got the last few days of some eagles that I'm going to be taking, because if you're a photographer, come up to the area. It's a great time. You don't have to get out of your car. I mean, if you go to up near the dam or near the VFW park, you can actually pull underneath some trees where eagles will actually be roosting, and you can get some great great photographs. That's what I've been working on right now. I have some sports shows I'm going to be doing coming up soon. We have the Madison Fishing Expo in a couple of weeks, and I'm the MC for that show. So come there. We'll have 25,000 people there. A lot of great speakers. This weekend we have the Muskie Show in Milwaukee, and that's well worth going to if you're a muskie fisherman.
It's a great show.
And, you know, just
lots going on.
Keeping busy in the outdoors.
Thanks, Gary. You'll be back and be with us again.
I'm sure I will.
All right. Gary Engberg, take a look at his blog there at GaryEngbergOutdoors.com. You know, we mentioned lead shot and so forth. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about lead poisoning from lead shot and fishing lures on the program, so I hope you'll tune in for that. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.